Today's episode is brought to you by Amy Martin and her debut book, Shits and Giggles, a laugh-out-loud collection of essays about the absurd, chaotic, and occasionally disgusting joyride that is motherhood. From lice outbreaks to traveling with kids to hormone hurricanes and the college admissions circus, Amy Martin captures the raw, ridiculous reality of parenting with honesty, heart, and just the right amount of profanity. She's the kind of mom who adores her kids, but also hides in the bathroom pretending to have digestive issues just for 5 minutes of peace. One reviewer called her Dave Barry Comes to Motherhood. It's sharp, it's shameless, it's the laugh you need in the middle of the madness, because if you're not laughing through the chaos, you're probably crying in your filthy car. Check out links to purchase Shits and Giggles in the show notes. It's perfect for moms who've truly seen some shit and lived to talk about it. 50% of net proceeds go to Golf Fights Cancer and the Tom Coughlin J Fund. Thank you, Amy, for your support of the Pop Culture Preservation Society.
Skyrockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
Happy belated 249th birthday, America. Can you believe, you guys?
I know. She doesn't look a day over 182.
Gosh, I don't know. I think she's looking a little worse for the wear these days.
She is. Honestly. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, she's looking a little tired these days.
Yeah, she's super tired.
We can only hope she gets a little makeover before next year, you guys. 250. Oh, God, it is the semi-quincentennial.
It has
a name. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I don't know about you guys, but I just can't imagine that anything is going to be like that once-in-a-lifetime, generation-defining year of 1976, you guys, when we celebrated the bicentennial.
I know. Yeah. It's like, right? we're the only ones. We're in it. Well, we're the only ones.
And as children during that time, well, and as female children, we had like long dresses that were like red, white, and blue.
Guys. And your little Betsy Ross hat.
Yes.
Well, it's so true. I mean, everything, our wardrobe for an entire year was kind of based around just celebrating our nation's birthday. I recently went on Reddit to read comments. And if you guys ever get bored, listeners, Kristen and Michelle, and you want to just humor yourself, go on Reddit, put something Gen X related in. I just put in bicentennial. Hundreds upon hundreds of Gen X related comments that had me kind of rolling. And also it's comforting again, because for us, this, I don't know any other generation that could have a particular year in their childhood that they can go back to as a collective and have these shared memories. It's just, I don't think it exists. And I don't know that it ever will. Well, maybe in the tricentennial, but we won't be around. And who knows?
Well, and think
about
this.
On other planets.
It's one of the only things that people can experience as a collective culture all at once that's happy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people are like, oh, I remember the Challenger exploit. Oh, I remember 9/11.
Right.
But this was a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it involved everyone. I mean, it involved our parents, our grandparents, you know, television, TV, songs, schoolhouse. I mean, all those things, which we talk about in this episode that listeners will hear in a few minutes. But in terms of the wardrobe stuff, some of the people had some recollections of clothes that they wore, like regular every day. We're not talking necessarily the costumes and the pageants and the parades. Everything from like the bicentennial quarters to people in their Reddit comments were reflecting on the decor of their homes. Like people said they had like revolutionary war scenes on their couches. Like that was the fabric.
Oh,
and
yes.
All
yes.
of that. We were like all in on colonial America and the parades and our moms sewing those costumes.
Okay. You're making me think now. I'm sorry. I totally interrupted you.
No, that's okay.
So there was a trend in this time to have these very antique-y types of things in your house. And that was my house. I didn't have a mid-century modern house. I had an antique-y house with kerosene lamps and pewter bells. And now I'm understanding where this came from, because this was not like 1800s. It was more like 1776.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of pewter.
Yes, lots of pewter. We had the Declaration of Independence that my mom got at like some sort. And then she, you remember we talked about when you would burn the edges
yes,
of something?
Yes, it was like
and
parchment,
she,
you burn
yes,
it.
And yeah. she burned the edges and then shellacked it on a piece of wood and it hung in the kitchen. Like the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
A piece of artwork.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's a choice.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that when I say it's a choice, it's a statement too.
Yeah.
We
it was a lot
in.
Of wood. It was a lot of dark wood. It was mm-hmm. very, what's the word? I'm not primordial. That's not, it was, well, it was old. I'll just,
it was colonial.
It was old.
It was colonial.
It was. No. Yeah. And the furniture was designed that way. We
yes.
had a thing called, and it wasn't until I was an adult, I realized what this is. We had a thing called a dough box. We used it as a, it's like side table and we kept our magazines in it. And I thought it was like D-O-B-O-X. But only like as an adult did my mom say, no, that's where they would put the dough for bread into
rice.
But it was a piece of furniture. And it wasn't an antique, you guys. It was like broad.
Oh, the reproductions.
Yeah, it was a reproduction.
You got it at JCPenney.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
had so many Windsor chairs. So
yes.
many Windsor chairs, like the kind that Paul Revere would have made.
We didn't. Yeah. We just basically, our entire house, my childhood, was just like sponsored by wicker. And
yeah,
rattan.
Well, there's that too. That's
wicker and rattan.
So getting back to kind of the fashion stuff, some of the people that commented on Reddit really made me laugh. One person remembered that they wore red, white, and blue checkered tough skins. And if
yes.
that doesn't
oh
scream 10X.
Oh my God.
Wait.
I have that. They're my
yes,
favorite skins.
This is amazing. I'm mm-hmm. writing all these things down for social
yeah.
media.
Yes. And then there were all these people underneath, much like how you just reacted, Kristen. Oh my gosh, I had those tough skins too. I did too. And to me, that just screams Gen X. We're talking red, white,
yes.
and blue checkered pants from Sears.
Yes.
The tough skins.
And
I
my mom,
that was
we
so
get
funny.
Into these big fights because my favorite outfit was, I've said this on this podcast before, my red, white, and blue checkered tough skins paired with like a rainbow colored granny square. And my
yes.
mom was like, it doesn't match. It clashes. I'm like, what is clashes? I don't care.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, you are not alone in your red, white, and blue checkered.
Oh, God,
tough
I love
skins.
Those pants.
That is for sure. And so a couple other things I thought I'd just share with you guys and see if you remember, because I don't think we chat about any of these in the episode. And some of it I was Husker Dude and some I just had to laugh about. So evidently it was a big deal to paint fire hydrants during the bicentennial. And
oh.
so people have these distinct memories of their fire hydrants
too.
In their town. One was like, they were all Minutemen. One person commented,
shoot.
My grandparents had Benjamin Franklin in front of their house. Like their fire hydrant was painted like Benjamin Franklin. It was all these patriotic themed fire hydrants.
Cute.
Yeah, fire hydrants. So I thought that was really fun. And I didn't quite remember that. Like I see those in those cute little quintessential small towns that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they just got all in and did all
I
of that.
I love
that.
So,
and then, Michelle, this is a question I have for you. So somebody shared, they just remember all their red, white, and blue clothing and every store and window display. Everything was filled with flags. And they also remembered that their family drove to George, Washington. So I think there's a town
so
called
funny.
George, Washington. And they, in 1976, for the 4th of July, they cooked the largest cherry pie 60 feet across. I don't know if it was like to break a world record. And this Reddit commenter, their family
God.
Went to have a piece of the pie and the line was so long to get a piece of the pie.
Well, wait, I'm imagining two things right now. Well, one, I didn't live there and even when I did live there, which would have been 1979, 80 all the way to 84 all the way. I don't know of George, Washington, but this giant pie is reminding me of one of my very favorite children's picture books that I talked about in that episode that we did on children's picture books called The Giant Jam Sandwich.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's this
oh,
giant,
yes. we
talked and
about
like
that.
The birds and the helicopters have to bring in like
yep.
the top
yes.
piece of bread. I'm imagining that right when you said it, I could picture those illustrations, but with like the lattice work.
Okay. Another commenter on Reddit who's from Philadelphia, and he said, we might have gone a little bit over the top, but his grandfather painted his Ford Pinto to look like a giant American flag.
Oh, cute.
What? So Ford grandfather, Pinto. Yes.
Oh my God.
Gen X to
I mean,
the nth degree with that.
The thing is, though, don't you all, like, and when you said that, too, I was like, oh, I remember seeing those. I don't, but, like, I could picture it so perfectly,
yeah.
and I think it's because, as children, that whole year, like leading up to it and probably after it, everything was painted like the American flag. Okay. Yes, the jeans and like the checkered, but also I can almost picture like women walking around where one leg might be like the stripes and one leg is blue with stars. I don't know. I'm just like
your shorts are red and white stripes and the pockets are blue stars. It was tons of stuff like that.
Everything was stars and stripes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think we do talk in this episode about the crocheted beer can hats. Do you remember those? I'm sure we say this in the episode. And there were lots of red, white, and blue beer can hats, the crocheted ones.
Gosh. Yeah. I think as a whole country dove in head first and we're like, we were going big or going home.
Yeah. It was very fun.
This made me kind of laugh. There's a commenter on Reddit that said there's an old photo floating around somewhere in their house of them and a friend at 10 years old sitting outside on the driveway, both of us in red, white, and blue, with my friend holding a copy of the U.S. Constitution and me holding my flute. We spent the day walking around our neighborhood with me playing Yankee Doodle and her waving a flag and the Constitution.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
I love those children so much. And I love that she's just waving the Constitution in the air. Like, see?
Yes. Like it's a flag. I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to start doing that now. Every walk I go on, I'm just going to wave the Constitution. I'm just going to wave it.
Make sure you burn the edges first, though.
Oh, yeah. On the part.
When else would we have done that and kind of gotten away with it, but it probably didn't seem that odd. Like, how cute. Look what they're doing. Like
the kids are just celebrating.
Yeah.
It was almost like a party. It's like, it wasn't patriotism as much as it was a party. This is our party. Look at the party we're having for all of us.
Like you said, it's so happy.
Yeah,
like, so no matter what else is kind of going on, this parades and pageants and flutes and waving things. I mean, it's just.
But it was happy. It was joyful. But it was the pride we felt. Like, we felt so just genuinely proud to be an American and proud of our country as children, you know?
Yeah. And as we talk about in this encore episode that you all will hear, this was also an Olympic year. So, I mean, the pride is
it's on steroids
just everywhere.
Yeah, pride
it's
on steroids.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because we get to cheer for the country.
Remember, too, in those days, we had the two Olympics, the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics in the same year. So it was almost like the Olympics went on for the whole year. And there's a place in this episode where you will hear us. Remember, we recorded this a long, long time ago. This was at the very beginning, like 5 years ago, at the beginning of when we began this podcast. And you'll hear us stumble over how to refer to Caitlyn Jenner. Because, of course, who won the decathlon? Caitlyn Jenner won the decathlon. But in 5 years ago, we were like, wait, but we're not supposed to say the old name? And now we know, of course. So we were trying to grapple within real time in the episode how to go about doing that. We thought, well, whatever happened in 1976, we used that name in 1976, and then we use the now name for right now. The truth is, now, of course, we know that we call that the dead name because that's harmful to Caitlyn Jenner. It hurts her feelings. So now we know if we were to do this episode all over again, we would say Caitlyn Jenner throughout.
Yeah, and those Olympic moments are as much a part of our memories of that year as anything. I mean, we've got Dorothy Hamill. I think
Nadia Comaneci.
Nadia.
I mean, we were all Nadia Comaneci that summer.
Yes.
Everybody was. Year.
Do either of you remember, you know, a lot of brands, restaurants, whatever, had kind of commemorative items that you could collect. And I didn't remember this, but one Reddit commenter talked about taking a road trip from Ohio to Wyoming, and 7-Up had this thing where each state had its own commemorative can. And if you collected all 50 of them and arranged them in a pyramid, it made a picture of Uncle Sam.
Guys, this is so fun, isn't it? Oh, my God, I want that now.
I know. All the collecting that year between the quarters.
It was just bicentennial quarters. And if you found one, it was lucky. You're like, I got a bicentennial. That was so
exactly.
So you saved it. You didn't spend it.
You saved that. Mm-hmm.
And lastly, I want to mention a comment that was shared a lot, and I don't remember this, but I want to ask if you guys do. Lots of people mentioned the American Freedom Train. Okay, so this was part of the celebration, and it was a train that traveled across America to celebrate, obviously, the bicentennial. And it was specially designed, red, white, and blue. And when I saw a picture of it, I thought, I think I remember hearing about it, but I don't think I ever saw it. And it carried over 500 historical artifacts. Oh, so it had the original Bill of Rights that it traveled with, a lunar rock from NASA. And it had stuff from the Smithsonian. Somebody said they remember seeing Dorothy's dress from The Wizard of Oz. And it just stopped in towns across the country. And lots of people have memories.
You guys,
of that.
What? Okay, I don't remember that, but I think that's a great idea. And I think they should do it now.
Yeah.
I think they should do it now with the Constitution, with the Bill of Rights, with the Liberty Bell, with all of these things to remind people. To remind people of what this country was founded on, because I think we've kind of lost our way.
Yeah, so that's what I was just about to say. I was about to say, I'd be like, you guys want to read that closely? Read
just
that
read it.
Print?
Just read this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, read this right now. And this is what this country is all about. I also want to remind people that all this attention to George Washington and, you know, is he one of the greatest people of all time? And why do we revere him? Why was he such a good leader? This is why. I'm just going to remind people, just put this in your memory banks. The number one thing that made George Washington so special to this nation is that at the end of two terms of being president, he voluntarily walked away to share power with somebody else. And that him abdicating power was something that people simply couldn't believe. This was how it was the peaceful transfer of power. And that was the number one thing that made him a great leader. Everybody's deep. Breathe deep.
Amen.
Thank you, George. I wanted to share with you guys a note we recently got. And when I say note, I mean handwritten with a stamp on it, put in the mailbox that arrived to Carolyn, Kristen, and Michelle and PCPS. And it has to do with this episode that we're about to encore for you guys, our 1976 episode. So this comes from our listener, Leanne. And she wanted to share with us that after listening to our 1976 episode, she took out the 1976 videotape to watch with her parents and her brother. Okay, so I'm guessing in my mind that they took their 8mm
movie
film
camera.
And did, movie camera thing and got it transferred onto VHS. Yeah.
That and fancy she said, new VHS tape.
Yes, that evening after watching it just led to a lot of fun and funny stories. And she goes on to share that Pop, that's what they called her dad, left us sadly last year. But because of this night that they had sharing their memories of 1976, we have a lot of pieces of him that we would not have had without that night. Much appreciated.
Oh, Leanne, thank you.
You guys, yes. I mean, all the memories. And listeners, why not do that after you listen to this episode today?
Yeah.
Like, reach out to a sibling, a family member, a friend that you have a memory about this particular year or any, maybe 4th of July or summer memory. But you will uncover things that you maybe never knew you never knew. And it will give you an insight that you didn't have before.
I just feel so honored that our conversation is what led to that. Thank you, Leanne, for letting us know that and for sending us a letter.
So really, you guys, it was a rare moment when our entire nation kind of paused and looked back. And I kind of say, at least as we're looking back now, actually agreed on a lot of things. At least that's the memory I have. And I kind of like that memory. And I don't think that, as I said earlier, another generation can point to a single year and say, that was ours.
Yeah.
But we can, and in this encore episode, we unpack how the bicentennial, it didn't just mark a milestone in American history, it marked us. I think.
Yeah.
I really do think that.
Yeah, it for sure did.
So please enjoy episode 38, 1976, From Pet Rocks to Patriotism. Can you imagine hearing those lyrics and then Dan Rather coming back saying, welcome back to our all-day coverage of the nation's 200th birthday.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who knew that the box of 64 was better than 48, but still made do with 24.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we will be saving the year that lit up the sky with patriotic celebrations, Olympic glory, and the most famous red swimsuit in history, 1976.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
So if you guys asked me to name one memory from 1976, it would be this. I open the door to step outside, and on the doormat is a dead squirrel with no head. It's a headless
what?
Squirrel.
What?
I know. And this was not an unusual thing at my house. What? And you know what? I know. Okay. So it was my cat. My cat liked to go catch things and eat their heads off and then would leave it on our doorstep so that we would be proud of him. And so on this day in 1976, I see the headless squirrel and I don't even care. I'm not even scared. I'm not even mad at the stupid cat for leaving me this special gift that he likes to leave us. And normally I would see the headless squirrel and then I would screech and I would refuse to go to school because I can't cross the threshold because there's a headless squirrel on it.
Understandable.
It was super stressful. But not today, motherfuckers. Can we bleep? Can we bleep? Because God bless America, today is the goddamn bicentennial. And it's like the best day of my whole life.
I've got a flag to wave.
That's right.
I've got a bomb pop to eat.
Yeah, I was excited about the bicentennial. I can't say that I was that excited. Your enthusiasm is quite admirable.
Hard to beat.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I do remember it the whole school year. Like January 76 until the end of the year being very patriotic. And we did have a Colonial America Day and my mom sewed me this, gosh, authentic Colonial outfit.
Bet you did. You have the little duster hat?
The little
cap? I had a little cap and I was a woman. So it was like a bonnet and I had the dress and an apron. And perhaps this is where my love of Williamsburg and my thought of when I retire, I want to go to Williamsburg and be one of the little actresses that reenacts.
You'd be really good at that.
Like carrying my little basket. But I love that outfit.
Wait, there's bread in the basket though, right?
Yes, because I'm going to the little bakery.
Yeah,
probably so get a snack.
Yeah.
Carolyn has thought about this a lot.
Oh, Carolyn, yes. I think you've showed a picture to us of that outfit.
Actually, that was even earlier. That was when I was in kindergarten, that outfit, when I was Betsy Ross in the school play.
And you've had a long-term love affair with Colonial America. I don't have any real specific memories of 1976, and like you guys do have like the 4th of July even, because I was 6 turning 7 in 1976, so I was in first and then second grade. I'm imagining in the 4th of July, we spent the month of July at my dad's house, in a little tiny, one stoplight tumbleweed town in Texas called Woodson. So most of my memories of 1976 are tied to toys and TV shows and playing with friends, making up dances, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't really have
You don't have a specific bicentennial July 4th didn't have a celebration in your town or anything?
No. Well, no, because we would have been in Woodson, which was very, very tiny. Maybe we would always go to this thing called the Fandangle. So maybe they did that was a really big gathering of, a lot of like, almost like an outdoor wagon wheel country musical type thing. I met Lady Bird Johnson there. Maybe that was the year I met Lady Bird Johnson.
Lady Bird.
She rode in the little tiny train thing with us.
But
no, I mean, other than, you know, my sister and my daddy and I always used to blow up fire, anthills with firecrackers. So maybe we blew up a couple extra anthills.
So this is very interesting because there was no federal celebration of the bicentennial because they deemed that it would be too expensive. So they encouraged local celebrations instead because that would foster more of a small town vibe. And that's really what they were trying to get people to do, more of an Americana kind of feel. And I didn't live in a small town. I lived in a city neighborhood, but city neighborhoods oftentimes feel like their own contained small town. And my small town was on fire, and it definitely felt like Mayberry that day. It was the whole neighborhood celebration did feel like Mayberry. It was a small town that day.
Wow. I was trying to think of what kind of celebration we had. I lived in the suburbs of Houston, Texas, so definitely not small town. And I didn't remember any parades or anything like that.
But my sister and I both have the same distinct memory, and it involves our yellow and green shag carpeting, because we were both sitting on that in front of the TV watching the tall ships.
Yes.
Going down the Hudson River.
I remember that.
Yes. Well, that was actually this huge event called Operation Sail, and it had hundreds of these tall, majestic ships that came from all over the world and floated down the Hudson River. And my dad is a nautical buff. He was in the Navy and he loves ships. And then he and my mom are from New York. So this was must-see TV for us. We were plunked in front of it. And that is the memory I have, that event. And then my sister and I both remember my dad had purchased, he had told my mom, if I die tomorrow, I would be really happy if you let me buy this. And it was a quadraphonic stereo, which was a really big deal in the mid 70s. It had these four speakers. And so my dad put the four speakers on the living or the family room, that carpet, and you would sit in the middle. And then he played his album from the Air Force marching band. And he played that song like dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun. That was your surround sound.
It was
literally.
And there were these jets that would fly in the in the record, and it sounded like they were going right over your ears. And I would remember my dad just staring at us because he knew it was coming, and he wanted to see our reaction to the jets flying over our heads. And so my vision of 4th of July is the tall ships and my dad with this anticipatory look on his face as we sat plunked between these four, at the time seemed like giant speakers on our floor. I mean, who put speakers on their floor? And sitting in the middle, and he would just be waiting for those jets to fly over and be like,
okay, that is adorable.
Yeah, did your hair blow?
Did you hear it?
Yes.
And the speakers were probably like 15 inches tall.
I know.
Okay, that's one of the questions that I have, because most of the time when we have patriotic celebrations, they're sort of a celebration of the military. I do not remember any military celebration in 1976. It was all Mayberry. I don't remember anything on TV, in the news, certainly not in my little neighborhood celebration. I mean, maybe they had the guys walk down the streets with the flags, but even that was dicey in 1976. That was not what people were looking for in 1976.
Yeah, I agree. That doesn't come into my memory at all. The only other thing that does, and I want to ask Martha, I'm feeling she might have been glued in front of her TV, but Bob Hope had his bicentennial Star Spangled Spectacular.
And
that featured Sammy Davis Jr., Debbie Reynolds, Captain Antoniel, and Donnie and Marie.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Is a star-studded bicentennial cast.
Yes, star-spangled spectacular. Sure was.
Yeah.
I feel like there was sort of an indoctrination that has a negative connotation, but I don't mean it this way, that they were trying to amp us up for what was coming, for whatever celebrations we were going to be taking part in. And so if you think about Schoolhouse Rock, that whole 1976 season was the America Rock era. Mm-hmm. That had to be on purpose. And so America Rock started at the end of 1975 with No More Kings, The Shot Heard Round the World, and the preamble, We the People, in order to form a more perfect union.
We've already covered that, girl.
Right. Followed at the beginning of 1976 with I'm Just a Bill, The Great American Melting Pot, Elbow Room, which is about the westward expansion, aka stealing Native people's lands. And finally, Fireworks. There's gonna be fireworks, celebrating. And that was about celebrating the bicentennial. And that was released just prior to July 4th. So that for 6 months, they were amping us children up on the carpeting in front of the TV on Saturday mornings.
So a lot of the information we are going to share today comes from a great podcast for us Gen Xers called For the Record, The 70s, hosted by Amy Lively, who, by the way, you guys, is another podcaster I want to read me bedtime stories.
I know.
Her voice is
lovely.
Butter. Yes. Mm-hmm. Amy is a high school U.S. history teacher who is also a big music nerd, especially for the music of the 70s. So her episodes examine the intersection of the songs we love with the things that were happening in the world at the time. And friends listening, if you like what you hear today, you can go even deeper by listening to her episode called The Spirit of 76. You can find it exclusively on Spotify or at FTR70.com. It's such a great podcast. It's just so phenomenal. Very interesting and informative. And I'm really enjoying it.
She's my new favorite historian. Everybody's got to have a favorite historian, right?
Right.
So Amy Lively's my favorite historian. And her episodes are chock full of juicy tidbits that will make you go, huh, I did not know that. And here's the perfect example. So while I was all hopped up on bomb pops on the bicentennial, there were a lot of people who were not excited about the bicentennial. Jesse Jackson, this was probably the first time Jesse Jackson came into our memories. Jesse Jackson was asking people to boycott the bicentennial because he said people of color were not yet free. Mm-hmm. And there were some who celebrated the Battle of Little Bighorn instead, which is also known as Custer's Last Stand. Mm. That's where the Lakota, the Northern Cheyenne, and Arapaho tribes combined forces to defeat U.S. forces. And 1976 would have been the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Little Bighorn. I did not know any of this.
Well, think about it. Carolyn, what grade were you in?
I was in fifth.
Okay, so you might have been learning about that. I'm going to keep going back to what our teachers were teaching us. You know, in first and second grade, they weren't teaching us about the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Anything bad.
Anything like that yet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
And also, we've talked about this before. It is such a shame almost how sheltered we were. You know, we weren't even being taught necessarily, you know, if in first and second and third and fourth grade, if someone would have tried to explain to us the reasoning behind Jesse Jackson boycotting, one, we probably wouldn't have really understood because that wasn't widely discussed.
No.
I mean, at least in my family, we didn't have these lovely open discussions. So I'm just thinking also, I'm going to assume teachers shied away from that kind of discussion.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and if people were having fun planning their bicentennial celebration, they'd be like, don't rain on my parade.
Exactly.
Dude.
Right.
Right. Okay, so the accidental theme song of the bicentennial was Afternoon Delight, which was as far from a protest song as you could possibly get.
You guys, I cannot get over this because, believe it or not, Afternoon Delight by the Starland Vocal Band was the theme song played throughout CBS's all-day coverage of the bicentennial, hosted by Dan Rather. So all day long, you could be hearing, gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight.
Oh, my God. Wait.
And then you get the sound effects of the skyrockets and flight.
That's the only, yes, you've got the stuff. That's the only connection, I think. And then, can you imagine hearing those lyrics and then Dan Rather coming back saying, welcome back to our all-day coverage of the nation's 200th birthday. I've got to believe there is some former CBS intern somewhere laughing that his or her joke idea for Afternoon Delight being the theme song made it all the way through. And you guys, I got to tell you, because as all of our listeners know, and you all know, I can't just leave it at that. I got to go deep dives about Afternoon Delight. Yes.
There's a rabbit hole to be sure. Oh, wait, can I say before though?
Oh, sure.
There's the skyrockets in flight, but we'll talk about this a little bit more, is I think people really wanted to be unserious. And Afternoon Delight, whether you're listening to the words or not, just sounds incredibly silly and unserious.
Well, one, it hadn't hit number one yet. It was a popular song, but the week after the all day long coverage with the theme song playing, it actually hit number one on the Billboard chart. Not sure if there's a correlation between that and hitting number one, but good to note. Mm-hmm. The songwriter actually took the title Afternoon Delight from the name of a happy hour menu at a bar he frequented. So it wasn't until that song got into our minds and into popular culture that the idea of making it about sex was even a thing. So,
okay, so do you mean that? So I thought after I learned about it that Afternoon Delight was referring to Nookie in the Afternoon. Did we take that from the song?
Yes.
Or did the song, okay, the so the song created
The song
it.
Created that definition of afternoon sex, which I guess was not really a thing because he talks about it usually happening at night, but let's go and get some during the day.
But it was a menu item at a cafe.
It was the
name
of
the menu. So when he says, gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight, it's almost as if you could substitute that with, gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab a double cheeseburger. Basically.
Yeah.
Because that can't be. It so perfectly means afternoon.
Well, it does. And that's what he meant it to mean. I think he loved the phrase afternoon delight, and that made him think of, oh, what else can an afternoon delight be?
Right. So he did like a play on that word.
Yes.
Play on those words.
Exactly. Yes. And speaking of words, you guys, I was blown away. I learned this yesterday. So because of the success of the song, CBS actually gave the Starland Vocal Band a variety series.
Oh, I remember this. I was all there.
Get a variety series. Yes. You get a variety series. Yep. Yes. You get a variety.
They've never done anything else, but you can have your own TV show.
So I was watching clips from it yesterday.
Oh, my
God. And there's a clip of them singing, like in front of some river or whatever. You guys, there is a line that I've said wrong forever. Talk about misheard lyrics. I'm thinking, though, that maybe for the radio they changed this, and this is why, because I saw this lyric written two different ways, but when I watch them move their lips, this is what they say. Rubbing sticks and stones together, making sparks ignite, and the thought of rubbing you is getting so exciting.
Rubbing sticks and stones together, making sparks ignite, and the thought of rubbing you is getting so exciting.
What? Not loving?
Not
loving you?
No. I'll put a link to this.
Well,
clip.
We're rubbing sticks and stones together. Where's the English teacher to help us with the metaphors?
I know. So when I saw their lips
moving.
Wait,
you need help with that metaphor?
I could not believe it. I was in shock. So I went back and watched it a few times and I'm doing my research. What are the lyrics? And so I don't know if maybe for some radio stations in the Bible Belt, you couldn't say rubbing you. So you had to change it to loving you. Because that's
when you
what I
go
think.
To look up their lyrics, what does it say? Does it say loving you?
It's been both ways. I found them both
ways.
You've
seen both.
Yes. Of course, they won Grammy that year for Best New Artist, and then they never had a hit again. Well, speaking of music and crazy, silly songs, what else was out there?
A lot of the music from 1976 fell into the silly category, kind of like fluffy and unserious. And I've always wondered, WTF with Muskrat Love.
Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam, do the jitterbug out in Muskrat Land and a shimmy. Sam is so scary.
Not that I didn't love that song. I loved it. But what the hell with the muskrats? Like, did somebody say, I've got a super idea about a song about muskrats? What do you guys think? I mean,
yeah, they kind of did.
What's a muskrat?
Right?
I don't even know what a muskrat is.
Yeah, they did, right?
It's like a badger,
so
right? Song,
I have actually some, it is a little bit. Yeah, it's like a little woodsy creature.
Okay.
Gnaws on wood. So the song, you guys, was originally titled Muskrat Candlelight, and it was written and recorded in 1972 by Willis Allen Ramsey. And it does indeed describe a romantic liaison between two muskrats named Susie and Sam.
Muskrat Sam. Do the jitterbug.
Right. Okay. So did you know, though, that in 1973, the band America recorded a cover of it?
Muskrat, muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right.
What? That does not match at all. That makes no sense.
They changed the name. They're the ones who changed the name to Muskrat Love, and their version reached number 67 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Okay.
And then along comes Tony Tennille. So when Tony Tennille heard America's cover, she said to the captain, do you think she called him the captain? Do you think she called the girl the captain?
Okay.
Do me,
captain.
So she said, captain, are they singing about muskrats? This is hysterical. And they were like, we need these lyrics. We need to know this song. So they went out the next day. They found the lyrics. They found the sheet music and they added it to their club act. And the audiences went nuts. So then when they were one track short for their 1976 debut album, which was called Songs of Joy, they added it. They added Muskrat Love to it. They're like, we need one more song. This has been a big crowd favorite. Also, this is funny. I don't know if you guys remember this in their version, but the captain, he has synthesizer generated sound effects, which are supposed to simulate muskrats mating.
Oh, wait. You just blew my mind because I was like.
Sue starts to giggle.
And I thought it was just like muskrats talking. I didn't know they were like humping.
Oh, little Kristen. You know what? Little Kristen, put your earmuffs on. It's okay.
I know, earmuffs. Muskrat humps.
Yeah, so that song, so their version, Captain and Tennille's version, made it to number 4 on the Hot 100 chart, even though people have very definite opinions on its greatness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have a really fun, funny fact, you guys. When Queen Elizabeth visited the White House in 1976 for the bicentennial, Captain and Tennille weirdly chose to sing Muskrat Love for the Queen. Of all their songs.
That is so 1976. I can't even stand it. Like, we can just end this episode right now. That's it.
That's all, folks.
Because you know everything you need to know about 1976.
Right.
Now.
And one guest said it was in very poor taste to sing of mating muskrats before the Queen. God. And Tony Tennille said only a person with a dirty mind would see something wrong. It's Disney-esque, to which I will challenge Tony Tennille by saying, reminding her of these lyrics. Now he's tickling her fancy, rubbing her toes, muzzle to muzzle. Now anything goes as they wriggle. Sue starts to giggle.
This is worse than that's the Disney-esque. Thought of rubbing you is getting me so excited.
Apparently that's Disney-esque to Tony Tennille. So, I mean, so that tells us everything we need to know about Tony and the captain's night-night time.
Maybe those are his little sounds that he makes at night.
Oh, gosh. I've got to go see if there's a clip on YouTube of the Queen's reaction to them singing that song.
Yeah. What is a muskrat?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, another song that Amy Lively talks about in, for the record, the 70s. Did I say that correctly? For the record, the 70s. Yes, in her 1976 episode is the song December 1963 by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, which reached number 1 in March of 1976. Because in 1976, we were having a love affair with the 50s. Frankie Valli was not a current act. This was a throwback act. This was a comeback for them. They were popular in the late 50s and the early 60s. Early 60s are always kind of considered part of the 50s because of the innocence. The nastiness hadn't begun yet. But this song, which was clearly about losing your virginity, by the way, speaking of muskrat love, was a huge hit. A huge hit.
Oh, yeah. It was, actually during research for this episode, answered a question for me. That song has, since I've been a child, has always been one of my very favorite songs. I love that song. I think I always thought it was from the 60s. It wasn't until like 2 days ago that I learned that it was actually recorded in 1976. So it actually answers a lot of questions of why this song has always, always, always been a really just a huge favorite of mine, probably because I heard it on the radio all the time in 1976.
It was a huge hit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was not on the oldie station. It was like number 4 on there. No, it was number 1 in March of 1976. And I just like rubbing sticks and stones together and rubbing our bodies together and then the muskrats with their funny little sounds. Here are the lyrics that I just think this is very poetic, but now I'm like, oh, this guy is doing it. Mm-hmm. I feel a rush like a rolling ball of thunder, spinning my head around and taking my body under. And as I recall, it ended much too soon.
Mm-hmm. So in the musical Jersey Boys, it's really cute. It's all of the Four Seasons, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons songs, and it's one of those jukebox musicals, but it's very cute. It's basically about how they all got together as a group, and it just tells their story, and they use all their music to tell the story. But yes, when they sing December 1963, it is about one of them singing about losing his virginity.
Isn't that funny? Uh-huh. I never would have picked up on that.
I just realized that when I listened to that episode of the podcast. Maybe the romantic in me, I thought it was just about love at first sight. Like he'd walked into this party and kind of across the room, saw this girl, and then the party ended too soon and he had to leave. Like, not that his
party.
No, he popped off a little too soon, Carol.
There you go.
But that makes perfect sense. That's how a child would think. And then, oh, and the party ended too soon. I have to go home.
I like
but this.
That.
Go back in time and think about what we were thinking about the 50s at the time. Because in 1976, we had Happy Days. We had Laverne and Shirley. I was invited to lots of 50s theme parties where you had to wear your poodle skirt. Mm-hmm. Grease comes out in 1978, whose theme song is also sung by Frankie Valli, who was a throwback artist. Do you remember Sha Na Na?
Oh, yes.
Right? Sha Na Na had their own TV show.
I loved 50s music, but Happy Days was my show in 1976, even if Chachi wasn't on it yet. Oh, I was so into Happy Days. That was, you know, at age seven, that was a show I could watch. And I could laugh at it and almost kind of feel like I was watching a grown-up show.
Yeah, for sure it was, because it was grown-up situations oftentimes. And do you remember 1976? This is super memorable for me. And I'm taking the temperature to see if it was as big a deal to everybody else as it was to me. 1976 were the Pinky Tuscadero-esque episodes.
Oh,
my God. Okay, Carolyn just like crossed herself, basically.
Remember the accident, the motorcycle accident?
Oh, yes, motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
So I've always wondered, like, why did we have this big fascination with the 50s at the time? And Amy Lively for the 70s answered my question for me. She says it perfectly. She says, the 70s inherits weariness from the 60s, lots of fussing and fighting, to borrow a line from the Beatles. And so we play make-believe with the 50s. And she says, we Gen Xers liked it because it was presented to us as a fun time to be a kid or a teenager. Mm-hmm. It was a fad, just like anything else, but the fad was fueled by a mythical presentation of the 50s as opposed to what it actually was, and we can thank Happy Days for that. But I think her observation that it was presented to us as a fun time to be a teenager, that's what it was for me, for sure.
And now, a pause for station identification.
In 1976, the nation was celebrating our bicentennial, and people had feelings.
They did. You might say they were following the people and conversations they enjoyed, and were also rating and reviewing all sorts of stuff that year. The politics, the Olympians, the music and movies.
Yeah, and you know they were sharing the things they loved with their friends.
Oh, definitely. And now, just like in 1976, we need you to do the same.
That's right. Just like Sonny and Cher, if you
Wait,
like
Sonny and Cher?
Yes.
Oh.
Just like Sonny and Cher, Kristen. Mm-hmm. If you like what you hear, please follow along where you listen. If it's on Apple Podcast, just click those three little dots in the top right corner. On Spotify, you can't miss it. It's a big follow button under our image. And on other platforms, I'm not really sure, but just look around. And much like you did with Dorothy Hamill, rate us. Please click those 5 stars, which is a gold medal, by the way, on Apple, and add to the nice reviews that are already there.
And just like your love for Charlie's Angels, share our podcast and social media pages with friends. It's the only way we know you are enjoying what you're hearing.
And do you want to get fan mail? It's super easy. Maybe it's not from Andy Gibb. Sigh. But if you sign up for our emails, you'll get super fun Gen X news from the PCPS delivered straight to your inbox. Just go to our website at poppreservationists.com and enter your name and email.
Just like 1976.
Sure, Michelle. Just like 1976.
And now, back to our show.
Let's circle back to wacky songs. If there was a top 10 silliest songs of all time list, I would definitely put Disco Duck on there. Released in 1976. Let's just add that to the pile, right? But also, what about Convoy? Convoy sounded super random and hokey, but Convoy was actually a protest song. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I learned that
from Amy on her podcast.
Yes, yeah. this comes directly from Amy. Yeah. The gas shortage and the new 55 miles per hour speed limit was getting in the way of truckers doing their jobs.
I loved learning like the CB lingo.
I had no idea what any of this was. All I knew was that I wanted a CB radio. Mm-hmm. And Michelle, I just know that you had one. I just know that you did.
We did. My stepfather had one in our motorhome and we got to use it. And my handle was Baby Shrimp.
Oh my
and
God.
He would let us use it. And I'd be all like, you know, Breaker 19, this is Baby Shrimp. We got a Smokey at mile marker 87 on 190 in a plain brown bag out.
What is like plain a little brown bag?
Like an unmarked car, an unmarked police car. And, oh, you know, like can that. You just picture this little seven-year-old? Breaker 19. And then he'd let us do the 10-4, good buddy. And the trucker, the other truckers loved it when my sister and I would get on the CB. And then they would be like, you know, hey there, little lady or whatever. And it was just really fun. Because you guys, CBs were our 1976 cell phones. Or like, I mean, absolutely. They were walkie-talkies, yeah. But they were really cell phones because people actually did. The truckers definitely relied on them.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it provided hours of entertainment for my family. And buckle up, people, literally, oh figuratively, God. Because we lived only about less than 2 miles from Interstate 10. That's where our house was. So we could get the CB transmissions and everything right in our driveway. Like, that's how close we were. So after dinner, we would go out in the car, the whole family. We wouldn't leave the car. Like, the car wouldn't leave the driveway. We would sit in the driveway. And my dad would talk on the CB radio, and we would just be entertained by the conversations that he would
like
have.
Like, you're just sitting in the driveway.
Just sitting in the driveway.
In the car, the whole family.
In the car, the whole family. Because we could pick that all up. We were that close. And, that's what we did. And then, so I called my mom the other night, and I asked her, because I can't remember what my dad's handle was. And she said, I don't remember his handle, but I do remember the handle of our parish priest, Father Domek.
Is he the one that wore Speedos?
No, that was my
Father Angelo.
That was Father Angelo.
Okay, then you may
principal.
Proceed. If he was the one that wore Speedos, I did not want to know his handle.
Yes.
No.
Go ahead.
No, this was nice Father Domek from St. Bartholomew's in Katy, Texas. And his handle was Charlie Tuna because his first name was Charles. So my mom couldn't remember my dad's, but she could remember our priest's, Charlie Tuna. And so.
Why Tuna? Oh, wait.
I guess because the Charlie, the
ad,
tuna.
Because of the ad, the tuna
right.
ad.
That's
Chicken
exactly
of the
right.
Sea.
Chicken of the Sea.
Yes.
Carolyn,
but
that's probably one of the most 70s memories I've ever heard in my life.
Totally.
And I love it so much that your that was your entertainment.
Oh, my gosh, it was. And it even translated into my bedroom because we lived so close to the interstate. And I learned the FCC didn't have enough channels for all this mm-hmm. CB communication. So before they actually added some more channels out in whatever the world of electronic communication, my walkie-talkie could pick up some
wow.
of the conversations as well as transmit them. So I could be in my room at like 9 o'clock at night and I would pretend I was a trucker.
And as long as your handle wasn't Blonde Bombshell,
right?
you were probably fine.
Yeah, they'd be like, what exit you had, you know, Blonde Bombshell. But I would lie and say like
1324 Gilbert Circle.
Our way to get pretty much everywhere was Interstate 10. So even to get to the grocery store, because we were that far out kind of in the suburbs. And so I knew the mile markers because we'd pass them. And so I'd lie on there and I'd say, Smokey, you know, see.
Oh, you did?
But my voice
Carolyn.
Was like of an 11-year-old girl.
That's
I think
true.
They probably figured out.
She was pretending to be a trucker.
That's a really good point. Christian and I are like, oh my God, she fooled all the truckers. And she's got this little tiny 11-year-old voice.
That's right.
And she's probably got like Christy and Jimmy McNichol playing in the background.
Right.
I felt so like I was breaking all these rules.
But that, again, is so 1976 that people would pretend to be truckers.
On their walkie-talkie from Sears, I'm sure.
Pretending to be a trucker, convoy, the lingo, all of it is an example of phenomena that was just exploding in 1976. There were so many phenomena this year, things that exploded and took hold of every kid in your classroom. Let's start with the Olympics.
Could there have been a better year than 1976 for there to be Olympics?
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
And remember, friends, that this was when the Winter and Summer Olympics were both held in the same year. We don't do that anymore now. But in 1976, we had Winter Olympics and we had the Summer Olympics. So we start off our National Pride year of 1976 in February in Innsbruck, Austria, because they host the Winter Games. And ladies and gentlemen, we were introduced to Dorothy Hamill and her hair. Yes.
I literally just got goosebumps all the way down to my ankles. Mm-hmm.
We love Dorothy. We love that she won the gold medal. Yep. Yes, that was very exciting. But I think more long-lasting was the hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did either of you have a Dorothy Hamill haircut?
It was my first haircut. The Dorothy Hamill was my very first haircut.
You got your Jan Brady haircut into Dorothy Hamill.
Into a Dorothy Hamill, because if you remember from our Brady Bunch episode, I was afraid to get my hair because I was under the impression that new hair grew out of the bottom of your old haircut, like Carol Brady's haircut. With the ski, jump at the bottom, the ski jump mullet. That's what I thought would happen if you got your haircut. So it wasn't until Dorothy Hamill that I took the plunge. And that's when we got a blow dryer, and my mom would blow dry my hair, and it would be all smooth and straight and round like a bowl on my head. It was beautiful.
I just think that there was nobody except Dorothy Hamill who could truly have a Dorothy Hamill haircut, not just because that's her name, but because to truly have a Dorothy Hamill haircut, you got to spin.
You got to spin.
You got to spin. Spin. Agreed. So it flies out in all the little layers. And if you're not Dorothy Hamill, you're not going to spin like that. So it just kind of lays flat.
Or if you're my hair, it sticks up. That is so not Dorothy Hamill. Yeah.
Or if you're my sister, you just spin around really fast in our living room and hope it happens. But she insisted that it would not happen unless she washed her hair with Short and Sassy shampoo.
Of course. Wait, yes. I'm picturing your sister as the Tasmanian devil. That's how she got everywhere. She just spun everywhere.
Dorothy Hamill introduces the shampoo for short hair, Short and Sassy shampoo.
It makes my hair shiny. More important, it gives my short hair a wonderful body.
So fast forward 7 months to August 1976. Now we are in Montreal, and we are there for the Summer Olympic Games. And these were pretty iconic, you guys.
Oh, yes, so iconic. I guess that's what iconic means. Carry on.
Yes.
Well, we were coming off of our nation's bicentennial high, and the flames of our patriotic spirit were flamed when Caitlyn Jenner, at the time known as Bruce Jenner, and I'm going to preface all of this, you guys, with I want to say this correctly. I want to use the right pronouns. I want to refer to Caitlyn, who was known then as Bruce, who won the decathlon.
We're working it. We are learning.
When we're referring to 1976, I guess my opinion would be that when referring to 1976 or any time before Caitlyn Jenner made her transformation, my feeling is that we could refer to 1976 as Bruce and use the pronouns him, he. You know, obviously now we don't do that, but I don't know if that's right. And I'm going to admit that I'm a little bit ignorant in knowing if that's okay to.
Well, and it's hard to know when you're talking about a news event. It's one thing to be talking about an individual and their individual life, but when you're talking about a news event, because did Caitlyn Jenner win the decathlon? Or did Bruce Jenner win the decathlon?
I mean, Bruce Jenner won the decathlon, but Caitlyn Jenner has always been in Bruce Jenner.
Right. Bruce Jenner would probably say he was always Caitlyn Jenner.
Of course.
She would always say she was always Caitlyn Jenner. But Bruce Jenner got the gold medal. This is very confusing.
So this is tricky, but here we go.
I still recall that image of Bruce at the time of him running around the track or just holding the American flag and just feeling go America. It was just such a perfect example and such perfect timing for that spirit.
I never put that together, Carolyn, how it came on the heels of the bicentennial and this 6 months of being indoctrinated by the shot heard around the world and we the people, that moment, the Olympics moment, came when we were still bubbling over with patriotic pride.
Exactly.
And that may be why we remember it so well. Do you guys remember the Olympic posters you could get at Burger King?
No, we never ate at Burger King.
this was big because it was like a collector's item and you wanted to get the right one because maybe this week it was the Bruce Jenner poster, but next week was going to be the Nadia Comaneci poster. And so you had to beg your parents to go to Burger King at the appropriate time so you could get the appropriate poster. And I did score. I got the Nadia Comaneci poster. I got it.
The other iconic moment from the games was the perfect 10 scored by gymnast Nadia Comaneci from Romania. Am I saying Nadia's name right? Is it Comaneci?
I think I always say Comaneci, but I was also, you know, seven.
I've heard both.
I don't know.
And I want to say Comaneci because there's an I on the end, but I also hear people say Comaneci.
Okay.
We'll ask Nadia.
Yes. And she married Bart Connor eventually, who was also a male gymnast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she goes by Nadia Connor now, but anyway.
That would be a bummer if she did.
It would be.
Oh, and remember Nadia's theme? It was played everywhere.
Be quiet, yes, but we're
going to. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. You looked at the. No, you were done. Okay, cut that.
She would never forget Nadia's theme.
I am far from done.
Okay.
Okay. So.
You looked like you settled back. Okay. Okay.
Well, yeah, I am.
She was just gearing up. She was just
gearing up. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Yes. We'll strike that, and you will continue. Okay.
So, this was the first perfect 10 scored by an athlete in the Olympic Games. And because the scoreboard only displayed three digits, when her score was shown, it showed as 1.00.
Oh my God, I did not know this.
Isn't that crazy? I guess they never expected anyone to get a perfect score. And she ended up earning 3 gold medals in the games.
Wow.
It was amazing. And obviously, because we remember, the world was mesmerized by her perfect performance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And she was solidified as a forever piece of our pop culture memories with the song Nadia's Theme.
Anyone who played the piano in 1976 learned how to play Nadia's theme.
Right. Surprisingly enough, you didn't learn it before that because it was originally written in 1971, the soundtrack for Bless the Beasts and the Children. It was just kind of an instrumental in the background.
Huh.
And then it was rearranged a little bit and in 1973 was used as the theme for The Young and the Restless.
Oh, that came first?
That came first.
Oh, I thought it came after.
I did too.
I did too, but no. It wasn't until a montage of Nadia's performance during the Olympics on the ABC Wide World of Sports, where they played, at that time, the song was called Cotton's Dream. That was the name of it from the soundtrack.
That's a dumb name.
They played that underneath the montage of Nadia's performances, and the public went crazy. They reached out to ABC, what is the song? Tell us the name of it. Where can we find it? A&M Records, who had the rights to Cotton's theme, thought, lots of interest. Let's release it as a commercial song. Let's change the name to Nadia's theme. They released it on August 26th, 1976. It was on the Billboard charts for 22 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Peaking at number 8. And you guys, Nadia Comaneci never performed to Nadia's theme.
No.
Oh, it was just from a recap.
It just was from the recap.
What a little marketing and PR can do for you.
That is amazing, though, but it comes from outcry, too. So these people who are watching the Wide World of Sports are so moved by the combination of Nadia Comaneci and this song that they make phone calls.
Exactly.
Right? That's a good example of how the collective drives culture. So they didn't give us that. We asked for it, right? The people at Wide World of Sports weren't looking for a hit song. They were just like, grab me a piece of music. Get that thing from the soap opera. And it becomes a huge hit.
Yes.
I just remember my memories of Nadia. I'm clearly watched it on television. I don't remember that. I just remember for months playing on my swing set and singing Nadia's theme as I swung on my little trapeze bar, probably just with my knees up. But I was obviously a world-class gymnast.
So how would you sing it? Because there are no lyrics. You just go.
You just hum it.
Do, 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 do.
And then I would get really into that. Na, 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 na. That was probably my big dismount.
Did you guys have a pet rock?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I had the official pet rock, but I think I
You just go in your backyard and pick one up?
Yeah, that's what I had.
Drew some eyes on it.
So the pet rock, I got one for my birthday in March of 1976 I did. And it was ever so exciting, but I seriously expected it to do something. I was so confused. I didn't understand this abstract concept of this rock was supposed to be a live pet. I mean, I really thought I was going to open the box with breathing holes in it, and I was going to take it out, and it was going to say hello or something.
You had issues with that, though, Kristen.
I really did. I know. Abstract thinking was difficult for me. And it came with a little manual on how to take care of your pet rock, and it had all these jokes and puns about mm-hmm. your pet rock, like it was a live pet. And I just remember reading it going, this is bullshit. Like, this is not, none of this is true.
Did they all look different, or did they all look the same?
No, they were
all
different.
They were all different.
They were rocks.
They were actual rocks.
Yeah.
They were,
I know they are, but like, were they all basalt rocks or were they all the same type of rock? Like, were they all, you know?
What I recall is that they all had the same hue.
Yeah. You guys go, they were rocks. But I don't know if they were manufactured rocks.
No, they were not manufactured.
Rocks. I didn't
get
one. I think I just made one. I don't think I wanted one. I mean, if I couldn't feed it baby food and it pooped out in its pretend diaper.
Well, I thought I might have to feed my rock and it might poop, but nothing happened.
I remember my pet rock had a really fancy, smanchy bedroom. It had a beanbag in it and everything.
Oh, lucky.
Well, I made that. It was like all in a shoebox, but I put some grass in there, but it had some nice decor that surrounded it, but I didn't expect it to poop.
The whole thing lasted like 6 months at the most. They came out in 1975, at the end of 1975, and they had a huge, huge batch of sales right around Christmas time. By the time it got to my birthday in March of 1976, the fad was already dying.
Oh.
And they were discounted on the shelves. So I may have gotten one of the last pet rocks. So maybe that's why mine was so inactive. He was kind of wearing out. But they sold over 1 million pet rocks.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were $4 each. So this guy became a millionaire.
I'm a millionaire. That is definitely going on the Instagram during 1976 week.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, talk about just a flash, just a tiny flash that burned like fire through our classroom.
Yeah. I turned 7 years old in 1976, so I was in my sweet spot with all the toys. And I told you guys in our Christmas episode back in December of 2020 that at the top of my Christmas list in 1976 was Stretch Armstrong. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
And I got him. Okay, so Holly Hobby actually launched in 1975, but really gained popularity in 1976. The rag doll, Holly Hobby.
I had the doll. I had the rag doll. I had the lunchbox. I had Holly Hobby wallpaper, I had my denim shirt with the Holly Hobby applique on the back.
Carolyn had that too.
I did. Mine was painted though. Mine was hand painted.
That's right. The Bionic Woman, Jamie Summers Barbie doll with the little plastic part. You took off her leg and you could see the little bionic
part inside.
You could
look inside and see the mechanism inside. That was cool.
Almost all my friends, though, they would lose the little skin part that you could take off.
Just
so then you couldn't really make her just be normal. Yeah. The Barbie Star Traveler motorhome and dune buggy was a big deal.
Oh, the motorhome was big. Yeah. That was very cool. Mm-hmm. I did covet that.
This is when the Weebles Haunted House was released in 1976. The Sunshine Family, we've posted Sunshine Family on Instagram several times and people go nuts. A lot of these toys, you guys, are coming straight from the Sears 1976 wish book. Easy Bake Oven was very big in 1976 and the Holly Hobby version especially, which is still sitting in my mom's closet. I've told her I do not want it, but yet it still sits there. Do you remember the little Pepsi machine that you could put the 2 liter in and then it came out? And you got the little tiny waxy cups with it.
Here's something that people got for Christmas in 1976 that I think blows them all away. And that is, I can't even believe that this was a gift, that this is the kind of thing that people would give it gifts as gifts, but they did. The Farrah Fawcett poster.
Oh.
And not just boys, girls too.
Here, son, here's some nipples.
Yes, totally. I know.
Like, isn't there stocking?
It's only because the parents wanted, I think I've said this before in our Eight Is Enough episode. It's only because the dad wanted the excuse of giving it to the son so the son would put it on his wall so the dad could go in and look at it.
I'm going to go have a talk with son.
I'm going to read bedtime stories tonight.
Oh, I'll do stories tonight.
Honey, you're fine.
I'll go take a bath.
Yeah.
But I had lots of girlfriends who had that poster on their wall too. She was an icon, not just for boys, but for girls too. She was, I mean, could she be the most beautiful woman who ever lived? I think it's possible.
I will say something about that poster. Even though, yes, the nipples were shown through her swimsuit, I think it's a very tastefully done poster.
It's not overtly sexual.
No, I don't think so.
And she was instructed to be overtly sexual. They were like, we'd make this sexy. And she was like, you know what? I'm going to do what I want, fellas. Back off.
And maybe that's one of the huge appeals of that poster is that it's not overly sexy. Is that it's very sexy, but almost just in a, I'm just going to sit here in this swimsuit, this one-piece swimsuit type of way.
It might be the difference between sexy and sexual.
Wow, right? That's deep.
So this is a really interesting story to me. So this poster was shot in her own backyard, the backyard she shared with Lee Majors. And this was before Charlie's Angels. All of this time seems to smash together and we associate the poster with Charlie's Angels. But really, this is before she was on Charlie's Angels. And the owner of the poster company had never heard of her before, but called her after his neighbor told him that his teenage son was buying women's magazines so he could look at this girl in shampoo ads, who was Farrah Fawcett. So the guy is like, hey, she is kind of a looker. Let's put her on a poster. They wanted her to wear a bikini. She refused to wear a bikini because she has a scar on her stomach. She always wore a one piece because of this scar. And so when she refuses to wear the bikini, she just goes inside and gets a red swimsuit from her own closet. So that was her swimsuit.
Wow.
And like you said, it's not overtly sexual at all. I think the headlights are famous, and that certainly helped. But there's nothing that can be done about that. She's not making her nipples poke out. And there was a rumor that still flies around that you can see the word sex written in the highlights of her hair.
I remember that rumor. Yeah.
Not in the headlights, in the highlights.
Have you seen it? Have you looked for it?
Yeah, I can show it to you.
I'm going to go back and look. I don't know that.
I mean, you have to stretch your imagination a little bit, but if you do, you can see the word sex. So it's sort of like this thing that is not overtly sexual, but it's inviting people to think about sex. Do you know where that swimsuit is now?
Where?
No.
Don't say it's in the Smithsonian?
Yes. Oh, it's in the Smithsonian.
I think it's earned its place in the Smithsonian.
It is in the Smithsonian's collection of culturally significant objects.
Like Fonzie's leather jacket.
If Fonzie's leather jacket
has a place in the Smithsonian, then I say that red swimsuit deserves
one as
well. I
agree. No matter what your opinion of it is, it took hold of the culture.
It did.
So the poster earned $12 million. She earned $400,000 in royalties, which was way more than the $5,000 a week she earned on Charlie's
Angels. It's interesting you say that she never wore a two-piece bathing suit, because I was just looking at a poster that had Charlie's Angels on it, which, by the way, debuted in 1976. And it had Farrah and Jacqueline Smith and Kate Jackson. And Jacqueline Smith is in a bikini. And Farrah, I think she's just in kind of a regular-ish outfit. And I remember looking at it thinking, I wonder why Farrah wasn't in the bikini. And now that makes a little bit more sense.
Okay, so what else were you guys watching on TV in 1976?
Well, other than Happy Days, I was all about Donnie and Marie.
I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll. I'm a little bit of Memphis and Nashville. With a little bit of Motown in my soul.
Did you guys watch the Donnie and Marie show?
Oh, yes.
Religiously.
So the Donnie and Marie show premiered on January 23rd, 1976, and Donnie was only 18 and Marie was just 16.
Wow. She was 16 years old?
Yes. And if you do go back and watch on YouTube, she's precious and has so much confidence, but she looks so much older. And I think it is her confidence that makes her seem so much older than 16.
Yeah.
At 18 and 16, they were the youngest duo to ever host their own variety show.
Wow.
Wow. And it always opened. My favorite part was that ice skating. They always opened with ice skating, and they're good.
Right.
Yeah. They're like really good ice skaters. Mm-hmm. They poked fun even at their squeaky clean image a lot. Mm-hmm. One time Donnie was singing a song and in the lyrics it said wine and whiskey and they changed it to milk.
I think that's really cute and it's really smart and it's reading the culture, because don't you think that their squeaky clean relates back to our fascination with the 50s when they thought everything was so innocent and fun? And you can sort of contrast that with maybe something like Sonny and Cher, which kind of had this sexually charged energy. And then let's have Donnie and Marie instead as we move into 1976. Mm-hmm. I will never be able to get the iconic image of it's the album cover, it's the dolls of the pink and purple chiffon mm-hmm. outfits that they were wearing. That's always mm-hmm. what I will picture Donnie and Marie mm-hmm. in forever and ever.
So iconic. And mm-hmm. speaking of iconic and what our podcast is all about, these pop culture nuggets, when I was in college, we had a party. And it was a themed party and it was Opposites Attract. And I took Andy and we were a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll.
Good for you.
And everybody knew what we were.
Yep. Everybody knows. You didn't have to explain yourself to anybody. Yeah. That's so funny.
Okay. So real quick, I want to give you a list of the other shows that premiered in 1976 that we were all probably watching. You guys, this was a great, great year for television.
Bring it on. I want to hear. That debuted in 76, you're saying?
Debuted in 1976. We have Alice.
Yeah, there's a new girl in town, and she's looking good. There's a fresh freckle face in the neighborhood.
Oh, I love that show.
We have What's Happening.
Hey, hey, hey.
I know. Laverne and Shirley.
That was in
1976. Yep.
Wow. I
would have thought Bionic Woman was 1976.
Yes, oh, yes, please. Please let Jamie Summers marry Steve Austin.
So they can have bionics.
Yes, bionic sex. Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say bionic babies.
Okay,
that would be
we've
fun
got
too.
Another really good one. Three's Company.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's Company too.
Family premiered in 1976. Such
wow. It's all the shows.
I know. The Muppet Show premiered in 1976, you guys. Okay, hold on tight, because we've got two coming up that's going to blow your minds. Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
From the Croft Super Show.
And the Croft Super Show, both premiered in 1976.
Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites.
I was very confused about Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, because I didn't know if they were mother and daughter or sisters, and I needed to know.
They
were just coworkers? I didn't understand. And you didn't mention anything that wasn't meaningful to me. You didn't mention a single thing where I was like, or I don't
totally
remember
agree.
It. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the news was on TV also at the time, because in those days, we only got our news from two sources. You watched it on TV, or you read it in the newspaper. But it was only on twice a day. But you didn't carry it around with you in your pocket. So you didn't read the news all day, every day. It was just these two places. And also seeing it through a child's lens means you may remember stuff, very specific things for very childlike reasons. And maybe you didn't understand the bigger stories. So, for instance, I was terrified of Son of Sam. Oh. I was afraid Son of Sam was going to leave New York, where he had a job as a serial killer, and he was going to come to St. Paul, Minnesota, and he was going to climb in my window, and he was going to kill me.
I do remember the election.
Yeah, the presidential
because
election.
Because my mom was a huge Carter supporter, and my sister and I had these little T-shirts that said vote for Jimmy Carter that I'll post a picture on social media because my sister still has hers. So I remember Jimmy Carter. I remember the peanut farmer. I remember Amy Carter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, because Amy was exactly my age. Yes. So that was huge. I thought we were going to be friends.
Yes, I wanted to be friends with Amy Carter.
It's probably the first election that a lot of us remember.
Right?
And in my third grade class, I voted for Jimmy Carter, and I was under the impression that I actually voted for Jimmy
Carter. Good for
Carter.
You. Yeah.
That my vote counted. I was like, oh, here's my ballot box. I'm voting for Jimmy Carter. And we had and the fact that he was a peanut farmer, I think just really like translated to children. He seemed like
he
a really nice, he was a nice guy. Whereas Gerald Ford was super boring and looked like a grandpa, and that didn't translate to us at all.
Also, Jimmy Carter, I mean, he was a dad for us at that age.
Yes, he was.
They had a really lovely little family and a wonderful, they were wonderful parents, and their daughter was very happy. And it was just, it was sort of idyllic that that could happen, that you could become, you could have just a young daughter and be a dad and be president.
That was very appealing.
I remember all of that, but I also remember Jimmy's brother, Billy. And Billy was kind of the black sheep, it seemed. And
Billy Beer?
Yeah, and Billy Beer. And he was maybe going to bring him down. Mm-hmm. But he still loved his brother, Billy, which I think that was really sweet.
Yeah, he didn't try to distance himself from Billy. He was like, wing. Okay, so at the end of the 1976 episode of For the Record, the 70s, Amy gives us the top 10 songs on July 4th, 1976, Our Country's Bicentennial. And that top 10 actually explains a lot for me and tells you a lot about where we were at the time. So I'll give you just a few and you'll see what I mean. In the 7 spot, number 7, Get Up and Boogie by Silver Convention.
That's right. Get up and boogie.
Get up. So disco was no longer confined to the soul or R&B charts. It's starting to come into the top 10. Number 5 was Shop Around by Captain and Tennille.
Mama told me, yeah. You better shop around. You better shop around.
Which is a throwback. That's a 1961 mm-hmm. song from Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. So we've got our 1950s love going on again. Number 2, Afternoon Delight. Silly, silly. And the number 1 song in all the land on July 4th, 1976 was Silly Love Songs by Paul McCartney and Wings.
You think that people would have had enough of silly love songs? But I look around me and I see it isn't so.
Ta-da! It's all silly.
You know what's interesting? Think about, so Sean Cassidy's first album is all covers of basically a 50 songs. Mm-hmm. Leif Garrett.
Yes.
Is
yes.
singing Surfin' USA, and he's singing a lot
totally.
Of covers. So this all the music even is just so indicative of the 1950s that
we were so
listening
in love
to.
With it. We mm-hmm. were so in love with it. And so Paul McCartney's song is very meta because it is a silly love song, and it is a clapback to John Lennon, who was dissing him for not talking about serious things in his music.
Mm.
And you're just doing silly love songs, man. And so Paul McCartney was like, damn right I am. And the truth is Paul McCartney was reading the room. He was reading the crowd correctly. Number one, he's on the charts. John Lennon isn't. But it was like, we didn't want serious things in 1976. We needed to relax and just ignore all the shit that came before. So my theory about 1976 is that it was all about what we wanted America to be, what we wished that it would be. With no more death and destruction and unrest and scandal, we just wanted the baseball and apple pie part. We wanted small town celebrations. We wanted silly love songs. We wanted to forget about Watergate and Vietnam and just go to Mayberry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We wanted Donnie and Marie on ice skates and with
yes,
a balloon drop at the end of every show.
Yes, mm-hmm. we did. So thanks for going back to 1976 with us today. If you're sick of the news, I suggest you make yourself a 1976 playlist and watch some Happy Days.
Good idea. And also make sure you are following where you're listening and sharing the podcast and the love on social media. We are at Pop Culture Preservation Society.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of those Regal Beagle regulars, Jack Tripper, Janet Wood, and Chrissy Snow. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to me, the Crushologist, and Carolyn and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, I guess there's always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded at Modern Well, a woman-centered co-working space in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.
We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
Today's episode is brought to you by Amy Martin and her debut book, Shits and Giggles, a laugh-out-loud collection of essays about the absurd, chaotic, and occasionally disgusting joyride that is motherhood. From lice outbreaks to traveling with kids to hormone hurricanes and the college admissions circus, Amy Martin captures the raw, ridiculous reality of parenting with honesty, heart, and just the right amount of profanity. She's the kind of mom who adores her kids, but also hides in the bathroom pretending to have digestive issues just for 5 minutes of peace. One reviewer called her Dave Barry Comes to Motherhood. It's sharp, it's shameless, it's the laugh you need in the middle of the madness, because if you're not laughing through the chaos, you're probably crying in your filthy car. Check out links to purchase Shits and Giggles in the show notes. It's perfect for moms who've truly seen some shit and lived to talk about it. 50% of net proceeds go to Golf Fights Cancer and the Tom Coughlin J Fund. Thank you, Amy, for your support of the Pop Culture Preservation Society.